Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I'll be guiding you about what I think of as the battle space of the war for the free world with some of the best in the business. I'll be visiting with Brett Decker, the Washington Times editorial page editor, about some insights from a new book he has authored, co-authored, on China. Bowing to Beijing, it's called. We will get into how that's happening in a moment. In fact, I'm going to say a few words about it myself, but we'll be talking with Brett in segment two. In segment three, my colleague Fred Grandy will be going inside the cloakroom with Louis Gohmert, Representative Gohmert of Texas, one of our favorite guests here. Always an exciting interview, and you'll be getting the best in the business talking with him, Fred Grandy, in segment three. Segment four, our colleague Andy McCarthy joins us, as he does each week. We'll be visiting with Andy about the GOP candidates' debate and what we make of their proficiency in matters of national security and foreign policy. Also, a story that's breaking here at Secure Freedom Radio, an effort by Dick Durbin to put out of business a tremendously important commission, the International Religious Freedom Commission. What's up with that? We'll get to that story with Andy McCarthy shortly. But first, my thoughts on this business of President Obama in the Pacific as a kind of prelude to my conversation with Brett Decker. President Obama is, it seems, at the moment, all about the Pacific. As you may have seen over the weekend, he was out there. We've been regaled with statements by the president and his subordinates about the commitment of the United States to the Pacific. As the president put it, the United States is a Pacific power, and we are here to stay. Well, we certainly have been a Pacific power, and I certainly hope we are here to stay. But unfortunately, thus far in his presidency, Mr. Obama has caused many of those, including his guests at this summit in Hawaii, to see the United States as less and less of a power, and prompted many of them, I'm afraid, to have serious doubts about our willingness to stay, in a strategically significant way, at least. Those perceptions have been, unfortunately, only further aggravated by the dynamic that has been characterizing Pacific affairs of late, namely the increasing emergence of communist China as both an economic and military hegemon, even as the United States seems to be a waning power, poorly led and in decline both economically and militarily. I take no pleasure in this, needless to say. This is not how we should be perceived or can safely be perceived. And yet, what has happened over the course of the Obama presidency, for sure, and arguably for presidencies before his, is that the United States has seemed to be, well, in retreat as well as in decline. And this is prompting a lot of our formal or de facto allies there, and the latter group seems now, amazingly, to include a few unlikely nations like Vietnam. But all of them seem to be panicking increasingly at the prospect that this country will be neither willing nor able to serve as the bulwark against Chinese imperialism that all of them increasingly perceive to be very much needed. Indeed, it's needed by us as well, not just our far-flung friends in the region. The trouble is that current and prospective adversaries, which includes not only China, but Russia and North Korea, are unquestionably being emboldened by this same perceived declining of U.S. power. It gives rise, in their estimation, unmistakably to a vacuum ripe for them to fill. And this has led, among other things, to some pretty undesirable developments like China's assertion of complete sovereignty over the international waters of the South China Sea, the new demands that Russia's once and future president, Vladimir Putin, is now making in opposing American missile defenses, and, of course, as ever, the intensifying proliferation, including, it appears, of nuclear weapons by communist North Korea. Now, the president has made some seemingly positive noises about increasing American involvement with and leadership of the Pacific Rim. He has talked about, in the course of this most recent summit, not only the importance of that kind of involvement, but some steps that seem designed actually to advance it, notably a Trans-Pacific Partnership, a multilateral trade arrangement that is by design excluding communist China, at least for the time being. This is a very welcome step, needless to say, and one that surely is aggravating China in the extreme. But it's troubling that even as the president is announcing this initiative, his administration's spokespeople are putting out the word that it may take, another year to flesh out the details of this arrangement. Now, call me cynical, but that would put a potential domestic political liability, which these free trade agreements have been for Democrats, beyond the next election, safely beyond the next election. And obviously, it may mean that in the interim, this partnership is really more symbolic than a real counterweight to the rising economic power and assertiveness of communist China. On this military side, before the president left, as we talked about last week with Bill Gertz, his administration let it be known that it was looking at a significant ramping up of our military presence in and capabilities with respect to dealing with the area denial and asymmetric warfare capabilities that China is amassing. The concern here is not that that's a bad idea. To the contrary, it's a terrific idea, as is, as Bill Gertz characterized it, the Cold War-style approach that it is meant to backstop vis-a-vis China. These are necessary and welcome adjustments to the national security posture and capabilities of the United States at the time that China is becoming undeniably more capable and, I think, more offensively oriented in its military capabilities. And yet, like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, so much of this seems to be a gleam in the eye. The kinds of capabilities that Bill Gertz has enumerated on the basis of background briefing by the Pentagon seem to be on the drawing boards at best, maybe not even on the drawing boards, and certainly unlikely to be affordable in the kind of budget environment we're in now, let alone the kind that Leon Panetta is now once again warning against in the event that we find ourselves going down the road of this MEDAX sequestration approach, cutting a further $600 billion off of the Pentagon accounts over the next decade, on top of the roughly $465 billion plus amount that's already been extracted by the Obama administration. In short, we're looking at a circumstance in which the sorts of things the president is talking about, his administration is engaging in, at least at the rhetorical level, are all too needed. And yet the question occurs, does the Obama administration, does the president mean it this time? Or will we simply be seeing a bit more of his trademark hope and change? Long on false hope, and short on the change we need to protect our interests and allies, both in the Asian Pacific region and elsewhere around this ever more dangerous world. Those are my thoughts. I'd welcome yours. SecureFreedomRadio.com is one way to pass them along. Our Twitter or Facebook accounts are also at your disposal. Next up, we'll be talking with Brett Decker about more of this business with China. How does all this buildup jive with the administration's practice of bowing to Beijing? Straight ahead.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy. Eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Congress doesn't have a budget for 2011, but the GOP has proposed a budget for 2012, and Bill Bennett likes it.
Maybe it helps to have that 2012 in the background, people hearing and seeing Ryan and the Republicans saying we're serious about really cutting the budget
as a backdrop
to this debate about 2011. People make the decision, well, Republicans seem much more serious about this.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined for a further fulmination, I guess is the word for it, about what China is up to and what America's policy should be towards communist China, with Brett Decker, a man I am very privileged to have the opportunity to work with a bit at the editorial page of the Washington Times. He is the editor of that superb page. He has a background in a variety of lines of work, including an editorial page writer in Hong Kong with the Wall Street Journal. He is an adjunct professor of government at Johns Hopkins University, my alma mater. And Brett, it is terrific to have you with us, especially on the occasion when so much is going on that really requires the sort of calibration that I think you and your co-author Bill Triplett, a friend and colleague of many years, have done in your new book, Bowing to Beijing, How Barack Obama is Hastening America's Decline and Ushering in a Century of Chinese Domination. Congratulations on the book. Troubling as it is, I gather it's being very well received, as it should be. And let's talk a little bit about this bowing business. What is it with President Obama? It seems it's not just bowing towards the Chinese, but it's particularly troubling with them. Where do you think that's coming from, and what does it mean to in the eyes of others around the world?
you know, it's great to be on, and I love your column, so I'm glad we can talk about some of this stuff on air. You know, people tell me I'm too fixated on the bowing, on the Obama bowing business, but to me it really encapsulates, like, what is wrong with this guy? In that, you know, he's not just a private citizen. He's not on his personal time. He's the head of state. He is the president of the United States. So he represents our whole country. He represents our government. He represents our whole establishment. You know, he goes and he, you know, at the waist bends down and shows signs of fealty to a foreign leader. Like, it's not just him. He is, like, showing, like, weakness and subservience for, like, from the greatest republic in the history of the world. And to me, it almost is like there's an emotional problem. You know, he's bowing to people all the time, and it's, you know, it's more than just anti-American. It seems like there's just some kind of deep self-loathing involved.
It does strike you as a psychological disturbance of some kind. But I was struck, and this goes to really your point about how those like the Chinese would take this, to say nothing of the Saudis, who are big on submission. Let's be clear. Jeff Kuhner, in a terrific review of your book in the Times the other day, talked about how, as I'm sure you do elsewhere, he's bowing not just to heads of state, but even to mid-level Chinese functionaries. Now, this has got to be conveying, in the tradition of China, a sort of kowtowing that only emboldens them to behave rather worse towards us, wouldn't you say?
I mean, you know, the Chinese, especially the Asian cultures, I mean, hierarchy isn't dead over there. We could learn a little bit from some of this stuff, you know. We get so crazy with egalitarianism that we forget that, you know, hierarchy matters. And over there, they haven't forgotten that. So not only do they see him bowing to, like, you know, to President Hu Jintao, but they see him bowing to, you know, what would be like a GS-13 here or something. And they scratch their head and they think, you know what, that's a culture and a country in decline, and, you know, you kind of have to agree with them.
Well, and they're sort of inclined, they're wired that way anyway, because they see themselves, of course, as the middle kingdom, the center of the universe, and so on. So they may have had a bad couple of centuries, Brett Decker, but they think they're back now. And let's talk about what you have found, well, in your reporting on this and your work at the Times and your new book, Bowing to Beijing, with Bill Triplett, in terms of China actually being at war with the United States. I don't think most Americans have a clue that that could be so. And in fact, we're endlessly told they're our most important trading partner, and if not an ally exactly, at least a partner in our diplomatic efforts to contain, you know, North Korea and so on. This is really a stunning alternative reality. And give us a sense of why you think it's more accurate than the other.
You know, I think people are worried about it below the surface. You know, our economy is so bad that people are, you know, kind of fixated on all their family members that don't have jobs. But I think they know that that's related to these bigger issues. We don't make anything anymore. We shipped our jobs overseas, largely to China. But what they don't do is flip it around and see how China is looking at it. And, you know, how the Communist Party in Beijing looks at it is, you know, this is a multi-front war. It doesn't have to be troops in uniform on the battlefield, or at least not yet. You know, they're preparing for that too. But they look at it as being across, you know, every sector of society, business, financial, military, cultural. All of those are fronts in a larger war. So, you know, if they can steal our business secrets and gobble up market share, that's part of war. If they can buy up parts of our bank or get, you know, our financial system dependent on their loans, that's a front on the war. You know, if they can get their culture to, you know, start chipping away at American exceptionalism and what makes this country great, that's part of the war. So, you know, they look at things in a very modern sense. You know, it's at every field of battle in society is something that counts for them. And, you know, I think they're making headway on a lot of those fronts.
That's the trouble. As you know so well, Brett Decker, if you go back to Sun Tzu, one of the preeminent Chinese strategists of all time, 5,000 years ago, writing about the value of defeating your enemy without having to go to, you know, classical war with them, they seem to be applying this, as you say, across many fronts and with considerable success. Look, Brett, in the remaining couple of minutes we have, let's turn to what we are being told the Obama administration is trying to do now, notwithstanding your analysis and critique, including most recently over the weekend with a Trans-Pacific Partnership being announced on the economic side, excluding China from this trade pact in the making. And, of course, your superb national security editor at the Times, Bill Gertz, has been reporting on something called air-sea battle that seems to be a different, a radically different approach in terms of our military capabilities in the region. Do you think these really amount to anything at this point or will? And if so, are they the right sorts of things for us to be doing? And will we be able to do them in time?
You know, I don't really know. I don't think, you know, when I meet with brass, and you can, you know, tell me if this jibes with what you do, I get a lot of puffery on China from at least from the senior level, you know, at the, you know, two-star level or something like that. They kind of, I think they like going on the junkets and rubbing elbows a little. At the colonel level, there's a little more sense, but like, I don't think our national security establishment has taken China seriously. I know some intel officers that were hawks on China, and they kind of had their careers sidelined because it's kind of seen as being politically incorrect. And I think it's a real danger because China is doing everything to build things up, and they're very serious about it. And, you know, every time I talk to somebody at the Pentagon, they always give these numbers like, you know, it'll take 50 years for China to be able to challenge us. Well, maybe in a static sense, but if we keep cutting and if we keep declining, I mean, you know, you're having it coming from both ends, you can catch up pretty fast. And, you know, a lot of bad wars have been, caused because people underestimated the enemy and didn't think they were as strong as they were.
That's so true. The misperceptions that often trigger wars are as serious as the correct perceptions and the naked ambitions of our enemies. On this point, Brett, I just very quickly, I had a conversation last night, and it was, I suppose, off the record, so I'll treat it that way, with a former prominent Secretary of State, who indicated that, you know, we needn't necessarily have a problem with China. They just need to understand that, as he put it, we're the biggest beak in the Pacific. And I thought to myself, and actually said to another colleague, I don't think they see it that way. Do you?
Well, and I don't know if I would see it that way if I were them either, because, you know,
yeah.
You know, a country that's indebted as much as we are can only be maintain a superpower status for so long. You know, our military costs a lot of money to keep up, and we're broke, and we need to borrow money from China to keep our government rolling.
Add on top of it, Brett Decker, that we have to buy military equipment from China.
and some of it turns out to be
defective. Brett, I have to let you go. I'm sorry. We've run to the end of our time, but I hope you'll come back soon.
Anytime.
Both to explore more of your wonderful book, Bowing to Beijing, How Barack Obama is Hastening America's Decline and Ushering in a Century of Chinese Domination, and to get your insights on other matters as well. Brett Decker of the Washington Times, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be on.
Next up, we have Louis Gohmert in the cloakroom with Fred Grandy. You're not going to want to miss this. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, a fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org.
A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Adopt Us Kids and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Fred Grandy, we are in the cloakroom right now and very pleased to welcome to the program Congressman Louie Gohmert. He is a Republican. The first district of Texas is his domain. He's been in Congress for four terms and currently serves on the Judiciary Committee, where he's the vice chair of crime, terrorism, and homeland security. And prior to his service in Congress, appointed by Governor Perry to a term as chief justice of the 12th Circuit Court of Appeals. Congressman, welcome to the show.
Well, it's great to be talking to you anytime, Fred. Yeah, well, always a pleasure.
I appreciate that, but I want to talk to you about something that both Frank and I have touched on this program, and that is the whole question of Muslim Brotherhood infiltration, perhaps inside our government. And you were very effective in grilling Secretary Napolitano a couple of weeks ago about Mohamed El Abiari, an appointee to the Homeland Security Advisory Council, who apparently, if we believe the stories in the press, has taken his security clearance and his classified status and used that to try to market classified documents to a media source. Now, you were very tough on the Homeland Security Secretary. She said she would get back to you. That was 2 weeks ago. Where are we now? Has she gotten back to you, Congressman?
She hasn't gotten back to me, but I was told indirectly yesterday, or I was told by another member, that the word is they're going to do nothing, that they've decided not to do anything. So I need to push to get an official response, because it was just outrageous. And Sandy Adams was on the committee at the time. She knew nothing about this until my questions, and she was down the road from me. But when it got to her, she was staggered like I was with Secretary Napolitano's nonchalance about somebody being given a security clearance by her, accessing information, and then trying to distribute classified information to the media. She said, oh, yeah, well, you know, I'll look into it. But Sandy was just, she just brought up, she couldn't believe that, that the Secretary of Homeland Security didn't seem to be bothered by any of this. And actually, it was Steve McGraw, the director of the Department of Public Safety in Texas, who is the one that, I mean, I'd gotten other information from other people, but he confirmed what I'd already understood, that she gave a security clearance, a secret, to this guy who was a featured speaker in a program here in the U.S. for the great enlightened leader, the Ayatollah Khomeini, that he's been responsible
in 2004.
For so much torture and killing.
Yeah.
And he was a featured person giving tribute to the guy as advertised. And then we've seen his own writing where he defends the Holy Land Foundation against these unfair attacks when they were convicted of 105 counts of funding terrorism. He's spoken glowingly of Qutb, the guy that was put to death in the 60s in Egypt. But his writings, according to Osama bin Laden, gave Osama bin Laden justification for killing as many Americans as he could.
Yeah.
And this guy supports him, and she gives a security clearance to him, a secret, lets him access this database for law enforcement, and then he downloads stuff and trying to sell it off, or not sell it, but provide it to the media to try to make Perry look bad.
If I could, Congressman, this is where I'm flummoxed, because you're talking about yourself, you're talking about Congresswoman Adams from Florida. This guy has betrayed a federal responsibility, and from what I'm hearing you say, the Department of Homeland Security is going to do nothing? Zip?
Yep, that's what I was told yesterday, and so I need to follow up and find out. I want to get it directly from the Homeland Security. They're going to do nothing about that.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred, it didn't stop there. I mean, when I asked her how many people were on her countering violent extremism, that's the name of the committee, because they didn't want to call it radical Islam. That it might offend somebody trying to kill us.
Yeah.
But countering violent extremism, I asked how many on the committee were members of the Muslim Brotherhood. She didn't know.
Well, no idea. Well, let me ask you this.
I asked that question because I had information that most of the people on that group were Muslim Brotherhood, but I needed to find out. I wanted to hear it directly from her, but the one with the direct knowledge says she just has no clue. She appoints people to it and has no idea if they're Muslim Brotherhood or not.
Let me ask you this, because this seems to be perhaps something your committee, your subcommittee, could concern itself with. You mentioned the study on countering violent extremism and correctly said that they will not use the word radicalization or terrorism because, as they say in the report, use of various terms to describe ideologically motivated violent crime like radicalization causes confusion. But listen to this. DHS should work with the federal government and state and local partners to establish common use lexicon and consistent use of terminology. That's essentially saying that our law enforcement officials, our counterterrorism officials, should work with guys like Mohammed El Abiari to find guys like Nidal Hassan. Now, Congressman, what's wrong with that?
Well, you know exactly what's wrong. You can't put the fox in charge of catching foxes.
Yeah.
You know, and we have people that have dedicated their adult lives to studying radical Islam, and it's not mainstream, but they are a threat to moderate Muslims as well. But they don't understand that the Muslim Brotherhood is dedicated to creating an international caliphate where we're all fall subject to, you know, the great 12th Imam.
But it seems to me that what's happening right now, and this is why maybe you should look at this in your committee, that they're not only standing down from this struggle, but they are also essentially saying, we want guys like El Biari to train our trainers, whereas some of the more competent counterintelligence trainings are not being allowed to get out. Now, it seems to me that that's the kind of thing that Congress ought to look at.
It absolutely is, and as said before, it's truly the these aren't the droids you're looking for. It's what these guys are doing. You know, they're saying, yeah, we see the radical terrorists here, but that's not who you're looking for. And then there is apparently also is they're pushing is a complete purge of anything negative about radical Islam.
I know.
And again, radical Islam poses even a greater threat, perhaps, to moderate Muslims because they're considered apostates and worthy of death. But it is an absolute threat to this country's existence based on our founding principles.
Well, you know,
and for them to turn and look the other way is just insane.
Well, Congressman, I'm with you, and Frank's with you, and the Center for Security Policy is with you. But it seems to me the problem right now is we don't have a big enough coalition to stand up to the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Justice and say, what you're doing is aiding and abetting and providing comfort to the enemy. So whatever you need to do in the way of hearings, I want to tell you that we at the center will be here to back you up. I wanted to, but in the time we have left, because we've only got a couple of minutes, talk about a criticism that you made on Friday last week about our efforts in Libya. And apparently it has come to light that now the leader of Al-Qaeda of the Islamic Maghreb, a group I didn't even know exist, is now bragging about the shoulder-fired rocket missiles and launchers that they've acquired from the U.S. Can you give us a little bit more information about that?
Well, of course, the president, without consulting Congress, just only being urged by the Muslim Brotherhood and the people that they were pushing, just decided to come in and take out Gaddafi.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, of course, no, we're just trying to neutralize things like heck. He came in. They could have, the rebels could not have defeated Gaddafi without the U.S. Military. And even though the president said, no, we've turned that all over to NATO, 65% of the NATO military is the United States military.
Mm-hmm.
And so this president went in and he helped Al-Qaeda. At the time, we knew there were some Al-Qaeda in the rebel forces, but we didn't realize it was quite to the extent that it is. But some of us, nonetheless, were warning, look, you don't know who you're helping here. These may be all of the people that want to destroy us. And sure enough, when you see the Al-Qaeda flag flying over the building in Benghazi, the headquarters there, you understand this government was aiding and abetting. I say this government, our United States government aided and abetted people that want to destroy our own way of life. It's just nuts to do that. And so we've helped these people. They've gotten weapons. We've helped them take out Gaddafi. And now we have a group that is sworn to the destruction of the great Satan, United States. We help put them in charge. And the same thing in Egypt. We helped take out an ally, somebody we had many agreements with that to this president meant nothing to have a signed agreement as an ally, and it has sent a scare through all of our allies around the world that this president, this administration in the United States is willing to not only turn a back on our allies, but actually help the enemies of us and our allies.
Congressman, thank heavens for guys like you. I wish there were more of you, and maybe after 2012 there will be. We've been talking to Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas on Secure Freedom Radio. Frank will be back with more right after this.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medications, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY, 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Is Nancy Pelosi looking to a higher power to get a balanced budget? Hugh Hewitt sets her straight.
When I hear you speak about this issue, of course, it's the Gospel of Matthew. When I was hungry, you begged me to eat and listen to the Gospel.
I just got to stop here. Nancy Pelosi quoting the Gospel of Matthew, as though that's got anything to do with the government. Let me just tell you, it doesn't.
Can I get an amen?
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. Well, we have had some attrition in our lineup. Andy McCarthy is absent without leave. We will catch up with him, I hope, soon. We are very fortunate, however, to have caught up with one of our favorite guests, Ambassador Yoram Edinger. He is in a crowded space in Israel at the moment, but we've managed to get him to join us to talk a little bit about what is happening at the moment with Israel's neighbor to the north, Syria. Ambassador Edinger, you follow these things very closely, and I know you have as much animus towards the Syrian regime as I do. What's likely to happen there, and what might it mean for both the regime, for its people, and for Israel?
Well, it seems to me that the events in Syria constitute a test case for policymakers, public opinion molders throughout the world. Because if we rewind the tape, we remember that only 2 years ago, more or less, the U.S. Sent back an ambassador to Damascus after a few years of absence, and the rationale was that Bashar Assad is potentially a constructive leader, and it serves American interest to send an ambassador and lend Bashar Assad more legitimacy. Well, we don't need to expand on the false assumption accompanying such a decision. We also, if you rewind the tape to more or less 2000, when Bashar Assad took the place of his father, the late Hafez Assad, the headlines in Western media and in official pronouncements was that moderation has befallen upon Syria, and the rationale was very simple, I should say simplistic. Bashar Assad is an eye doctor, educated in London, president of the Syrian Internet Association, married to a modern-style Arab wife, likes London and knows London more than he knows Damascus, and therefore the conclusion was made, therefore he is a moderate. And certainly that false, simplistic assumption detached from the Middle East crashed against the rocks of the harsh realities. And it seems to me that this is only a test case, because those were the assumptions that made when it came to Egypt and Tunisia and Libya and Yemen and today Jordan and Saudi Arabia. And the bottom line is, we're talking about a tenuous region. And tenuous region means tenuous policies, alliances, and tenuous compliance with commitment, which means no compliance. And that, in my mind, should be the guideline for future American and Western policy towards the Middle East as a whole.
Yes. We're speaking with Ambassador Yoram Edinger, formerly represented his government from Israel in the United States, specifically with responsibilities for liaising with the Congress of the United States. He also served as Consul General in Houston for a time. Mr. Ambassador, this tenuousness that you've talked about, one of your countrymen, Barry Rubin, has written quite powerfully, is reminiscent of a miscalculation, a similar kind of miscalculation that we made back in helping, in a modest, relatively modest way, Arab nationalists like Hafez Assad come to power 50 years ago. He points out that we are now very aggressively pushing to bring to power folks who are, well, let's call it what it is, enemies of this country, the Muslim Brotherhood most especially in many of these countries. Do you think that's what's likely to eventuate in Syria as well?
Well, again, we have to look strategically and not just at Syria. In Syria, just like in any Arab country, we're talking about a terrain which for the last 14 centuries has been dominated by a repressive Islamic monopoly, the social, the political, the economic, and increasingly the military sectors of every single Arab country are dominated by different kinds of Islam. And that which we call moderate is less extreme, but never has been moderate. And in fact, the assumption that a democratic process means ushering in of democracy was exposed as false already back in Germany in 1933. There was a democratic process, and we know what happened.
That didn't work out too well.
Yeah, and in Iran, we know what happened when the supposed despot, the Shah, was toppled by the supposed old man from Paris. And we know what happened. And we know what happened when the U.S. pushed Israel to allow Hamas to participate in a democratic electoral process in Gaza. Once again, the bad guys took over. And the same thing is happening right now in Tunisia. The same thing is happening right now in process in Egypt, and definitely in Syria, and probably in most other Arab countries.
One of the other of these nations in the general vicinity that is often pointed to, particularly of late by the Obama administration, Mr. Ambassador, as a moderate government, even if it is an Islamist government, because it came to power via elections and has subsequently received electoral mandates on several occasions, is the government of Recep Erdogan in Turkey, the AKP party there. Give us a sense of how you and Israel see the current conduct of this government in Turkey, and in particular, how we should in the West regard this nation that is held up as a model of moderation in the Islamic world, and to say nothing of being a NATO ally. Is it that in fact?
Well, to take one example, we're talking about the sanctions on Iran and the intent by the U.S. to intensify the sanctions. We don't have the time to discuss the falsity or the false assumption behind sanctions, which by definition cannot be effective. But even that mild effectiveness is being hampered by Turkey. Turkey is one of the key countries which have violated sanctions against Iran. Turkey, in a way, depends upon oil pipeline from Iran. Turkey trades with Iran. But the fundamental change which we have seen in Turkey since 2002 with what is defined, and probably rightly so, a moderate wing of Islam, but that is a regime which wants to revive the Ottoman Empire. That is a regime which wants to be the leader of the Muslim world, and therefore they pander to Iran. And today's ties between Turkey and Iran are much better than they were before the Erdogan party took over in 2002. And the impact definitely also undermines the effectiveness of NATO. And the impact certainly plays into the hands of Russia, which under the best case scenario is an adversary of the U.S. with a Putin and his alike. In the near future, it could even be an enemy of the U.S. But Turkey has certainly better relations now with Iran and Russia. One thing which I should add to put everything in a fair context, while Turkey is blasting Israel in any form possible, the trade relations between Turkey and Israel blossom, and the trade balance in 2011 is as good and probably better than it was in 2010.
Hmm. Interesting how that kind of double game is being played. It reminds me, and again, Barry Rubin has written about this, Mr. Ambassador, and we're speaking once again with Ambassador Yoram Edinger from Israel in a somewhat crowded space. But Barry reports that the Recep Erdogan's regime's foreign minister, Ahmed Davutoğlu, has written a book in Turkish saying that his plan was to move from alliance with the West to one with the Islamist world in order to fight the West. The fellow has also written a book in English which talks about his commitment to the Western alliance. So this is what we're facing in many of these capitals, as you say. Ambassador Edinger, we appreciate very much your perspective from Israel, and you're taking a few minutes from the reception you're attending to join us to talk about them, and we look forward to having you back again very soon. Thank you, sir. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All the best. And that's it for this installment of Secure Freedom Radio. I hope you'll join us again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.